Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Yeah, we've got a busy day today. First of all, Shelby's back. And so after quite an absence doing all kinds of incredibly valuable projects and things, Shelby's back to talk to us about what's going on in cruise and travel. And it's just in time, too, because, you know, we've got DeSantis with the lawsuits. And I haven't been following them quite as closely as I should, because I know Shelby's going to brief us on everything that's happening with the cruise industry, because she has all the inside knowledge of what's going on, being our resident cruise and travel expert here at Action Radio, as well as having her own cruise and travel services, videos, and information, which is wonderful. So Shelby's back. She'll be back at 20 minutes past the hour. We've got Jean coming up here any minute now when she checks in with our, well, it used to be the Life Coach Report. Now it's whatever Jean wants to talk about. But since we've added an extra report back in, I'm going to have to sort of let Jean do her thing much more. And we have Josie with the South of the Border Report at 40 minutes past the hour. So this is going to be a busy day. We've got a ton of things going on, and it's going to be, I think, very exciting. Just to let you know what's been going on the last 24 hours, the way I think about stuff, the way I kind of arrange my brain, you know, it's the follow-up. It's the inquisitiveness. It's the question not being asked. And the question not being asked, when Biden went to Europe to basically give away everything to Putin, he gave him 16 items that were off limits to ransomware, cyber attack, things like that, right? And so I thought to myself, well, what are those 16? And so I looked around and I couldn't find them. I found all kinds of articles that would talk about the fact that there were 16 items that Biden, gave to Putin, but I couldn't figure out what they were. So nobody would ever list that, which is normal for articles. They give you the sensation without the actual information. And so I found them at this government page, and apparently they published those 16 in huge detail. So this is something that Putin, I'm sure, already had. In fact, Xi Jinping has, anybody, Iran has, North Korea has. I mean, anybody that looks online, government publications, 16 vital infrastructure items. There they are. I'm going to go to them in the second hour, but it just fascinates me that the government's so open, and it's like, oh, no, don't give him the 16 items. That's a target list. Well, he's got it already. It's been published online. In fact, I was curious enough to look online for U.S. government publication, how to wage war against the United States. I mean, I'm sure somewhere the government has published something to how to wage war against us from the government. That's the way it goes. All right, let's bring on Gene. I'll be right back.
In these times of trial and tribulation, of epidemic and or economic crisis, of personal challenge and societal collapse, there is one place you can retreat, recharge, and re-energize to take on the world. That place is the Life Coach Report with Jean Vernick here on Action Radio. What better way to start your day?
This is way too mellow for the new and improved Jean Vernick. So we're going to work on this. I get with Gene after the show, and we're gonna come with a new theme. It's a little more exciting for you and a little shorter because our time is short. So, Gene, it's all yours. Take it away. Good morning. Let's find out how to.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning,
our day.
Everybody. Oh, goodness. Okay. Well, a lot of what I have to say today is stuff that I've said in the past, but really, with what we're going through, people need to get involved, put it that way. And so, what it is speak up, and I don't even mean speak like use your voice, but use your actions, do whatever, get involved, or shut up. And it's so easy to say, what do you need to do this, they need to do that. But people will say what needs to be done, but they won't take legal action. And we need patience.
Hell yeah.
And to me, I don't know what you consider a patriot, but to me, a patriot is someone who loves their country and what it stands for. And they're not stuck in victim mentality. They're victors. You know why? They don't live in the past. You know, this is so ridiculous what we're going through right now as far as, you know, all this stuff, even with slavery. If you look back in time, if you really look back in time, blacks have slaves as well as whites. But the bottom line is, you know, so many people want repercussions because of our compensation, because of what their ancestors went through. You know what? You didn't live that life. They lived that life so you could have a better life. And so we need patriots. We need people because, you know what? I think there are so many of us, but I think a lot of us are closet patriots. Some are afraid to say something because retaliation, and that makes sense. You know, you could lose your job, and you can say, oh, no, that doesn't happen. Of course it does. You can be hate stuff. It's just really interesting. But you know what? There are so many of us, and you have so much more power in numbers. So where you live, start an organization if there isn't already one. And if there is one, get involved. Get involved at the local level. If there's a need, and you can always say, well, what can I do? Well, look, what are you good at? Look at that. Then look at what is the need and how can you fill that need? And for some people, they may not physically be able to do it, but they are good cheerleaders. So you know what? Find someone that you know that would fit that need and encourage them. Be their support, because behind every good, or I wouldn't say powerful, but not powerful in a nasty thing, powerful in just inspiring way. Behind every person like that, they've got an entourage of people behind the scenes that support them that you never hear about. But we also want or need people who want to know the truth. They want to discover the truth. And what the truth is, and it's so interesting now with the audits and now who is it, the Secretary of State or whoever it is from Colorado, it's like she's forbidding anything about the audits from the 2020 election to be done in her state. I'm sorry, but when people talk like that, you know there's something they're trying to hide, because if they believed it was on the up and up, sure, come on in. Inspect everything you want. You know why? Because you're not going to find anything. But what is she covering up? So we deserve to know the truth, and we need to continue to listen. Actually, we need to quit believe in mainstream media and what they have to say. What you have to do is listen to what someone says. If it makes sense to you, it resonates with you, and there's validity behind it, then it's the truth. If not, don't listen to it. And I don't even know what the numbers are in like ABC, NBC, CBS, and what the nightly news viewership, but it can't be good. I mean, if you even listen to cable viewership is down. But we need to know the truth. We need to keep digging until we can discover what the truth is. That's very important. And another thing, don't apologize just to apologize. That's one thing that drove me nuts about Obama. He was apologizing about the United States for everything. It's like, you know what? We are not a mean country. And what he was apologizing for, there was no basis for that. Basically, he was making us look small. And when we apologize, if you apologize because you truly mean it, that is good. And if he truly meant it, I mean, if he truly meant what he said when he apologized, you know what? Then he should not have been president, because he is not a patriot and he does not love our country. But the thing is, apology is very, opening. It's very positive as far as if you did something wrong and you believe you did something wrong, apologize for it. But it drives me nuts. And I have this one friend I know that if I say something he doesn't like right away, it's like, you need to apologize for that. And I'm like, apologize for what? It's like, if it doesn't mean true, and sometimes, okay, if you use a harsh tone or you say something without thinking, because we all do it now and then, okay, apologize for that. But don't apologize because you wore pink socks today and everybody else wore red. That's stupid. If you wanted to wear pink, wear pink. Don't apologize just because someone makes you feel guilty, because you know what? You're giving your energy away. So apologize when an apology comes from a good heart. If it's not coming from a good heart, don't do it. And don't do it because someone tells you, oh, you need to apologize for that. It's like, heck no, it's what I believe in. And if it's what you believe, that's all that matters. Because you know what? We're only responsible for ourselves. And if you have small children, well, you're responsible for them too. But, I mean, we can only for who we are, what we are, and all that. We can't be responsible for what other people do, think, or say. However, we can influence them by speaking our truth, walking our truth, and helping them see the truth. But people, really, get involved. Run for school board. Run for county offices. Run for mayor. You don't need to run for the president. You can run for governor, whatever you want to do. But look in your area. What is the need? And how can you fill it? And also, there comes a time where, and I'm going to be very frank, Greg, where we need to put on our big kid underwear and act like an adult. And if it gets twisted, and let me tell you, mine have gotten twisted in the past, and I've gone up to my boss a time or two and said, man, my underwear and our binds, give me a minute, I need to get them straightened out, and I did. And that's what each of us need to do. We need to get our underwear pulled up, we need to get them untwisted, and we need to act like an adult. Stop acting like a child. So that's all I have to say, Greg.
No, I just love your passion. I'm just never sure where to jump in here because every time you make a great statement, I have a question, and then you start another topic. It's fabulous. But this is amazing. And you want to talk about patriots. I mean, what you're doing is very patriotic. The fact that you're speaking out. You're speaking out fearlessly, and you don't care if you're right or wrong for everybody because it doesn't matter. You're never going to be, you know, right or wrong for everybody. And this idea that people come up to you and say you have to apologize for who you are and what you are, that's control. That's to make you feel bad. That's a leftist tactic, and there are many. See, they've already got the playbook. Right? The problem is the conservatives, independents, patriots, we don't have the playbook. We're just kind of improvising. But the left already has the playbook, and part of the playbook includes putting you down for who you are, what you are, and putting down everything you believe. If you believe in the United States, they put down the United States. If you believe in God, they put down God. If you believe in, a classic education, you know, a basic knowledge, they put that down and force, you know, brainwashing into you. You know, I had a post calling, you know, critical race theory, critical race conspiracy theory, because pretty much that's what it is. All right. It's a conspiracy to change thoughts, to change minds, to remove all, you know, it's like taking all of history and saying that's wrong. We're going to tell you what history was. You know, starting today, and then we're going to go backwards, and we're going to tell you it's all based on slavery, it's all based on oppression, it's all based on racism, it's all based on victims and oppressors, and that's the way the world is. And that's not the way the world is. You know, does that mean there aren't victims and oppressors? No, of course not. But what it means is that, you know, you can determine through logic and reason, you know, as you see history, as you see truth, as you see the future, and as you see your own life. You don't need someone else to tell you what your life is and reinforce what you should think. You know, all those things are happening right now. So it's fascinating to listen to of all the things going on. But logic and reason is what we use here on the show all the time. You know, you take a look at any issue that I'm looking at. I'm looking at right now the 16 secret off-limit targets, you know, Biden gave to Putin, and I found them online. Well, how did I find them? Because I asked the question. You know, so the most basic things people could do, start asking the questions and don't be afraid of where the answers take you. Go ahead.
And when you're listening to people are trying to figure out the truth, also look at where they're coming from. Mm. Because if they're coming from fear or if they're coming from, and I want to say hate, look how many people, how many newscasters at this point hate President Trump. And some of the Republican Party. And so whatever they say, doesn't matter what they say, for the most part, they're putting a biased slant on it. Years ago, I think they did a better job of kind of covering up what their beliefs were, but now they don't even cover it up. It's just real blatant out there. And so you have to also look at who's saying it and, okay, what are their motives? You know, are they going to be harmed by this? And you just even talk about the Clintons. How many people in their circle have committed suicide? And now this last one, the newscaster from Alabama committed suicide. Do you really think he committed suicide? I'm sorry, but I don't believe that. I don't believe that at all.
You know, it's interesting you say that. Seth Rich, the investigation is still going on. The person that Gene's talking about is a reporter who broke the story of Lynch, and I've forgotten her first name. She was Attorney General at the time, meeting Clinton at an airport tarmac in Arizona. And then he came out and said, well, we were just talking about our grandkids or something, or whatever it was. It was some bogus story. But they were arranging Loretta Lynch, I believe her name was. Anyway, is. She's still around. But the point is that it was a secret meeting. It wasn't supposed to get out public, and it did. And so the reporter, you know, sometime later, like now, allegedly commits suicide. And, of course, we don't know the method. They don't publish it. And the things we don't know, we still don't know who killed Ashley Babbitt. There's a lot of things we don't know. All these things are being covered up, and you're just supposed to accept it. But the point I wanted to make, and Shelby's on the line, too, so I got her listening for a couple of minutes before I bring her on. It's going to be wonderful to have her back, so I can't wait. But the point is that as I've talked about, as you mentioned, too, that the leftist news people are becoming – or have been basically advocates. The public relations, you know, outreach for the Democrat Party and the leftists and the communists and Black Lives Matter and Antifa and all the groups out there. Right? So that's what the left has become. Journalism's dead, and it has been for a while. So for conservative journalists or independent journalists or Christian journalists or anybody, whatever your perspective, to try and retain the ethics of objective journalism in a world where the other side is political activists is silly. It's absurd. It's ridiculous. That's not going to get you anywhere. So your altruism is misplaced. So what I've come up with is a term called conservative news advocates. Instead, again, I'm speaking too fast again. Conservative news advocates. That's where people, you know, have a conservative perspective to the news, which a lot of folks do, like One American News. But then they become advocates for that position, right? To counter the left, who are already advocates for their position. And the way you do that, of course, the best way I think is to talk about our citizen legislation, the bills that we have that aren't necessarily conservative. Actually, a lot of them are nonpartisan, because they help everybody. That's the way the bills are designed. But the thing is that if we're going to have any kind of parity in news reporting, the conservative news folks have to be just as activist as the liberal news folks, so that people can decide which way they want to go, and not just the story, but the solutions. That's what I think. And comment from you, then I'll bring on Shelby.
No, that's very true. I think whenever we have something like a gripe, something that we don't like, okay, what is the alternative? What is the solution? It's okay to complain about something. I mean, you shouldn't complain about it, but it's okay to make a statement. Okay, like let's say, I'll take school lunch. School lunch, they should not have da-da-da-da. Okay, well then what can they have instead? Give an alternative. Just don't say what needs to change. How can it change? Or what is wrong? Come up with an idea. And that's what, present it to whoever the powers that be may be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it's easy to sit back and say what's wrong, what needs to be, you know, all this stuff, find fault in anything. I mean, I can do that too, but what can we do about it to change it? That's the important thing. And what are you going to, I mean, not you, but each one of us going to do to help this country get back to what it was meant to be and what our forefathers wanted it to be, and not how some people are making it sound like it's supposed to be and making it sound like we're just the worst country on earth. It's like, no, we're still the greatest country on earth. We just, you know, have lost our way in some ways.
And that, Gene, is the reason I created Action Radio. Now, I've been waiting to play this for a couple months now. You're welcome.
Yeah, man. Come with Shelby to faraway places. Wonderful beaches, exotic foods, meet new and fascinating people as Action Radio cruise and travel reporter Shelby Frenette takes you to where dreams become your reality and experiences become your best memories. Yeah, man. Here we go.
And now after way too long an absence doing amazing projects, once again, Shelby Frenette. Good morning, darling. Welcome back.
Hi, Shelby.
Oh, you're live. You are live. Turn your phone on. Your line's live. We know she's there somewhere.
Do you think I'm Shelby?
Wait a minute. No, we got the wrong. Oh, wait a minute. I got the wrong line. You've got a similar phone number. That's what happened. This is Kyle. Kyle, I am so sorry. I did actually for a minute. I played that theme for now. I really feel stupid because you know I glance at the phone numbers. I look at them. I go, oh, there she is, and it's not. So Kyle, my apologies. Would you like a theme? We need to have a theme for Kyle.
I do like that music, though. And it was that your voice there?
That was me. Yeah.
Yes.
I do all the production
yes,
work
that
here.
Is cool.
So anyway, when Shelby comes up, well, should I play it again? I can't. Well, this is, you know, the funny thing is you called in. You've got a similar area code. You called in just about the time when I expected her to call in. And so this is, I just glanced at it. Ah, there she is. So this is what happens when, well, here's what, well, I'll tell you later. But anyway, we've got producer folks. We got things happening. We got stuff going on that's going to make my life a little easier. So things like this probably won't happen again. So enjoy my mistakes while you can. All right, Cal, your turn. What do you think? You're on with Gene.
Oh, dude, what you do in this Gene gal is her verbiage is beautiful. I'm already copying some of it.
Okay.
And what you do, Greg, with what you have up until now, and I'm sure it's just going to grow and grow and grow and get bigger. And, well, you know, don't get it too big, because one of the things I've learned from the old timers at the gym I work out on, and I didn't think I was going to go in this direction, but is that sometimes they end up back by themselves. And I'm not suggesting what to do. I'm not suggesting how you should do this, but just keep in the thought. They all tell me, these elders, that and this is for Gene or anybody else that's listening, they all grow and grow because they think big and big is better. And then all of a sudden they get to the point where, you know, like this one guy, he's designs kitchens, and he's back to just designing a kitchen or two here or there by himself after having 20 or 30 employees. And my copart on the radio here in Sacramento, which we just got off of again, but anyway, we got on and got back off. But he had 80 employees, and he used to say that 10 made him money. So anyway, as you grow, Greg, remember that. Sometimes, you know, la, 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 la.
No, that makes sense.
That's very
and now
true.
I've actually verified that we do have Shelby's number. So let me bring her on. Hold on, Kyle. You can stick around, too. This is
I just want to make a comment that,
yeah,
you know, more
do.
People think more is better. More isn't always better. So you're exactly right.
Well, I don't know
all
how many people
good. I'll listen. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, you can stick around. I see. I don't know how many people we're going to need for Action Radio. I mean, I know I need a few more, and I don't know how much this is going to grow. And it depends on how the Center for Citizen Legislation grows, and whether that's a national or a worldwide organization. So, but I find that we can do a whole lot with not a lot of folks, because most of what we're doing is going to be empowering people to do things for themselves. In other words, writing their own legislation. So we can be the workshop, we can be the conduit. But people, you know, by the thousands, by the tens of thousands, by the hundreds of thousands, can take bills that they like and lobby for them. And so the organization doesn't have to be that huge, but the people that work with us, the citizens, the legislators, the people that just share the show, hopefully will be in the millions. Anyway, Shelby, Shelby's on the line too. Shelby, I got to make a confession. I goofed. I thought Kyle's number was your number. They were just close enough that I thought it was you calling, and so I already played your theme. Would you like to hear your theme again?
That's okay. I'm happy to be here. How are you all?
Hi.
Well, it's nice to have you back. You know, yeah, and I introduce you, and then Kyle, like this guy's voice comes on and goes, oh, no, what did I do?
That's so fun. Hi, Kyle. Did you give a good news report for travel and cruise? Did you do the news and travel report, Kyle, on the fly?
No, I'm just sitting here in my recliner in Sacramento, California. It's 5:25 in the morning.
Good morning. I love it.
Well,
it's so nice to have
you
back. Yeah. I mean, it's perfect. I know you've been busy, and if you want to tell us about your projects and things like that, that'd be great just for a minute. But if not, that's fine. But I would be curious, you know, of course, now it's the perfect time to have you back. Because especially with the lawsuit, with the cruise ships coming back on, and the CDC, I still think there's a myth that the CDC thinks they can regulate cruise ships, and they can't, not from my reading of their authority. So and I think DeSantis brought that out too with the whole, you know, cruise ship lawsuit. So I'm going to turn it over to you. Where do we stand? What's going on? Can we go back cruising again? And what's happening? And again, it's good to have you back.
Yeah, great. Well, so yes, lots of projects. Quite a few different social media contracts, you know, because social media is really where advertising is these days for small businesses. So, yeah, I worked with the mayor. I worked with another travel company. I worked with a yoga studio and a tennis company. So lots of social media going on. Not much travel, and so that's given me more time to devote to other, you know, accounts. But as far as travel goes, the only cruising going on right now, for the most part, is in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
So the UK had started allowing cruising through the UK for UK residents, not for UK visitors. And they had, like, you know, I have a couple really incredible YouTubers, content creators in that area of the world that are very popular, and they have their finger on the pulse, and they were on the first cruise out of UK on MSC. That was really the first true one that could go places. But it only stopped at one place because they had some restrictions in one of the ports. It was kind of almost like a cruise to nowhere, and they did have to stay with the group as they got off the ship. You know, they had to stay with cruise line supported shore excursions. They did have to wear masks if they weren't seated, and it was approximately, I would say it was about a fourth the capacity. 1,000 people were allowed, and the ship could hold, well, not even a fourth. The ship could hold 6,000, and only 1,000 passengers are allowed right now in that area per vessel. And, you know, they said they had a great time. You know, the rules to me seem very...
You get a little background noise, too. Is that your line? I don't know if you're outside in the wind or something, but or something flying overhead, but I think it's one of – it might be your line, Shelby. It's getting a little bit of noise. Oh, there it goes.
Okay, I'll try this.
Oh, that works,
yeah,
better. Okay.
I mean, as far as the cruising experience, they do have to wear masks until they're seated at a bar or restaurant. So, always.
What does that make? What sense does that make? Are the germs – or is coronavirus at 6 feet and not at 3 feet? I mean, what kind of idiots put all these plans together?
It is so hard for me to digest all this information. And I will tell you that everybody complied. And from the people that I spoke to who, are, like I said, they're in the industry. So they were definitely, you know, inquiring with all the passengers. Everybody, nobody minded. And I said, well, I think that might be different in the States. I don't think that that's going to go that well if that same protocol is made. However, it's important to notice that in MSC, you do not have to be vaccinated for cruising with MSC, and they have been the ones that have been really leading the way throughout this whole cruise shutdown, and they have gone wherever they were allowed to go, and they have not required vaccinations. What they do require is that you get a test. If you are not vaccinated, you have to have a test within 3 days, a negative test, and then you do get tested once you pass through security, and everybody is masked unless they're seated or outside. And it's just very difficult for me to understand how people can really embrace that type of rule set because of the
fact
that
the British,
like
they still
said,
have a queen. They're still used to being ruled.
Yes.
They're subjects. They're not citizens. They never have been. That's why the British came here in the 1700s and the 1600s to get away from that kind of nonsense. But I have to ask another question, too, and I know Kyle's going to get a kick out of this as well. Where in the U.K., nothing against the U.K., but where exactly do you cruise in the U.K.?
I have to actually go to ask them. I don't really recall, to be honest with you. I've never cruised in the U.K., but they do like the Canary Islands. I know they do that area. I don't think that's
okay.
The area they were doing. I'll have to get back to you on that. But it wasn't really a cruise at all. I mean, it was kind of a cruise to nowhere, but they were happy about it. So that's nice. I mean, I'm glad they're happy, and they were happy to function in that manner. I think one of the legit concerns that the industry has is that if they continue to keep it at 1,000 people per ship, then it won't be beneficial or cost-effective for the cruise lines to continue. Again, that's just their professional opinion. My opinion is that they'll keep going as long as they can at this point. Something's better than nothing. It's interesting.
Well, they're making this up. You know, the science has come out, the real science, on the masks. Masks don't work. We always knew they didn't work. You know, they say a virus flying through a mask is like a mosquito going through a chain link fence. You know, there's no stopping it. It's ridiculous. Lockdowns, if they worked, COVID would have stopped, you know, last year about this time, which it actually did, in fact, if you look at the CDC statistics. So the fact that the masks don't work, the lockdowns don't work, the fact that it was proven by, you know, COVID's still here, so obviously they didn't work, hasn't sunk in yet. They're still under this weird psychology that if we just do this or more of this, which doesn't work, you know, it's like the definition of insanity. Let's keep doing what we're doing that's not working, and maybe it'll work. And it's not working. You know, what works is what Florida did. Open everything up, get on the fresh air, get your vitamins, you know, get your nutrition, exercise, and everybody's exposed anyway. In fact, everybody was probably exposed a year ago. You know, and everything after that has been, you know, government mythology and propaganda. So there's nobody standing up and saying, look, you idiots, well, except us and a few other folks, but no one's standing up, you know, against the cruise lines, against there's that organization that you know about that regulates the cruise lines and the CDC, except for DeSantis, who says, you don't have the authority to do this. You're making this stuff up. There's no science behind it. There's no logic behind it. And even if, you know, if they're worried, you still have to change the laws to take the authority that you're taking now. Where's the response to this idiocy?
That's your opinion. I understand where you're coming from. I don't necessarily completely agree with everything that you have as an opinion
and that's fine.
Even the facts, but I definitely feel like it's a bit ridiculous to have someone walk towards a table to have a mask on and have to keep it on until they sit down. I think that's ridiculous. And just for show. And there's nothing more I hate than doing things just for show. Like, if it's just for show, it should be left for the stage, not for rules and regulations. And so that does, I do find that to be absurdly, not just hypocritical, but just ineffective. And also rule bearing for no reason. You know, you have to wear a mask when you're walking and until you sit down. Well, at this point, that's working for them because they only have 1,000 passengers on a 6,000 person vessel. So there are enough seats for everyone at one time, right? However, and then of course in the show lounge, they do want you to wear it. So there's that as well. So there's just so many different rules. And yet you can take it off when you're eating and drinking, and you can congregate with people as long as you're seated at the same table, but yet you can't go in the whirlpool unless you're in the same cabin. So there's just all these different rules that I feel are just so for show, and that already just irritates me. But people are happy to do it. If they are happy to do it, then who am I to judge? You know, if you're happy to do it, then fine by
you. Yeah, that's my job. I'll judge. I see where you draw the line.
In the U.S., they wanted to get out. They had a cruise from the Bahamas, not from the U.S., but from the Bahamas. I know, Governor DeSantis has tried to make it so that the cruise lines cannot require vaccines, which is interesting because I'm not sure he has that authority for an international vessel. And the cruise lines, for the most part, would prefer to actually require the vaccines because they feel, and I have to tell you from my experience with the thousands and thousands of guests that I know that love the cruise, the majority of them want it to be vaccinated. There are a few that do not, but majority of them want it to be vaccinated mandatory. So in the cruise line perspective, just business-wise, they would prefer to be able to require vaccinations, mostly because they would like people to cruise, I think. And that's going to be where the public is allowing that you can allow you'll want to cruise. So right now they tried to do a cruise, but then a couple of their crew members came up positive, which is intriguing because I believe all their crew members a bunch of their crew members are already vaccinated, but they got it anyway, and they didn't show anything but symptoms, some slight symptoms. But so that completely kiboshed the whole cruising out of Florida, and they've pushed it to the end of July. They're just making it up as they go along, as you said. And I know in one sense they're doing the best they can, in another it's just a pomp and circumstance, and then of course they're trying to do what the people want, the people that are going to pay the cruise, and they're going to pay some premium prices, and they want to do what is going to go over well in the media. And I think that's part of the CDC connection, is that they want to, there, those are the guidelines, those are the people putting the guidelines out, so they're trying to follow the guidelines that are being put out. And
but they don't have
to,
because the CDC has no authority to, guidelines are suggestions. I mean, there's nothing mandatory about them because the CDC doesn't have that authority. I got the CDC's own website, at the bottom of my computer. I was just reading it before the show. All they can do is stop people from coming into the country who they suspect of having a communicable disease. And the way they suspect is that person has symptoms of a communicable disease. They can stop them. They can isolate them. They can do things for folks coming in, but that's it. They can't direct cruise lines. They can't make blanket policy.
Yeah.
They can't establish rules that people have to follow. None of that's true.
The fact that it would have to do with legalities and the lawyers giving them, speaking to the people that are in high positions in the cruise lines, it's more about the legality of it and then having that against them, that they did not follow the CDC guidelines and the lawsuits would be able to be.
So that's public relations. Yeah, that's public relations and lawsuits. It's not actual legality. And this is where the problem comes in. And I think you're absolutely right. But they're trying to avoid any kind of a lawsuit based on what I think is misinformation. And so but the problem is I don't want my rights as an individual who has a right to travel to be violated because of some PR person concerned in the corporate deck of these cruise companies that they're worried about a lawsuit. If they're worried about a lawsuit, defend against it and use the truth. The truth is the CDC doesn't have the right to regulate
them.
I
mean, that's,
the truth
that's
is that people get diseases
right,
all the time.
But it doesn't,
go ahead.
That doesn't get them. I mean, that's fine to say the truth, use the truth in the court of law, but that just is not the way it plays out. And they can't expose themselves. I mean, it's a business decision, and I don't think it's a wrong one to be wanting to follow guidelines that are being set in such a serious situation where people could die, and then if they die, they can sue them. And, you know, as if they need another problem. I mean, I'm sure they don't want anyone to die either. However, I would suspect it's more the fact that just because it's the truth doesn't mean they're going to win the lawsuit, Greg.
Yeah, no, I think I understand.
You know,
you're articulating the counter argument to me very well, and so I appreciate that. Like I say, no one has to agree with me on this show, Kyle, I want to get you in a minute here too. But the problem that I see is like they didn't do this for norovirus. I mean, people have died from various infections on board, and when something happens, when cruise ships have been shut down, when they're brought in because everybody's sick on board, the next cruise goes out. They don't change their entire policy. They don't test everybody for norovirus. They don't test the ships. They don't swab the bottom for norovirus or any of the other things that people can catch on board ship. It's an enclosed environment. What I'm saying is this particular disease has been so propagandized and so lied about, and all the truth is coming about. We talked about this yesterday. We took a victory lap. What we said back on March 2nd in 2020, that hydroxychloroquine, and now as I've learned, ivermectin, cures COVID. The cures are far better than the vaccines, because the vaccines change your genetics for life. The cures are simple, and they've been around for 60-plus years. And so this propagandized disease doesn't have to happen. And like I say, the cruise companies, if they had any balls at all, they'd use the truth, okay? And they say, look, we're going to keep operating. We're going to do what we do. We're going to make money. We're going to open up to travelers. And the federal government and the state government, if they had any balls, they'd enforce the Constitution. So, look, there's a right to travel. You have no right to dictate people's medical, injections into their body. You can't do that. If someone gets sick, they get sick. But it's like it's okay for any other disease except this one. And this one's not that serious because 99.997% of people are cured. Get over it anyway. I'm sorry, Kelly.
Right. Yeah, I mean, for the most part, you're right. For the most part, people are going to get over it. However, definitely people are dying that wouldn't normally die. I mean, we had crew members that died from this disease, and crew members are
for
sure
get the cures?
Excuse me?
Did they get the cures? Ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, things like that?
I expect not. However, they did die. These are crew members who we get health checks. And, I mean, these people are at their top of their game, because to work on a cruise ship, you cannot be anything but fit, because you're working like a dog, literally. And, you know, it's really sad. And it's definitely unusual. And I agree with you in the sense that I feel like it has been completely out of proportion. However, I also understand where the cruise lines are coming from. First of all, I mean, not only are they completely exposed because there's a way to trace it, it's unfair that, like, you know, the airlines act as if everything is as safe as it could possibly be. You're in some sort of safe bubble. But the only truth to it is there's no way to trace it back to the airline, so they get out scot-free. However, the cruise lines are really under scrutiny because they are an enclosed environment, and then you have the whole situation of ports of call having the right to deny them and to, like, hold their passengers up at sea. I mean,
that was, I think at this point, even people that would like to cruise, even people that are not scared of the virus, 100% of them are worried about cruising because they're afraid that if there's an outbreak, they're going to hold them hostage again, which, you know, that was unprecedented. And that's something that the cruise lines nor the passengers want to deal with. So they're taking every precaution possible to not have that, you know, replicated and not have their passengers held hostage on a ship and force a call to be able to say, hey, we don't want you. I mean, that was absurd, and that did happen.
Yeah, they need better rules to operate under. And I just want to make one more comment that all the government public transportation systems are running just fine. There are no restrictions. Nobody's telling the government that they have to have, you know, subway passports or things like that. So it's okay for the government to keep things running, but not for private industry. Kyle, you
right.
want to get into this?
Yeah,
you know.
I completely agree with you. I think I got Kyle on that one.
Shelby, did you have something?
I'd love to hear your thoughts. And I'm going to have to go, but thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Shelby. Kyle, do you want to comment on that while Shelby's still here?
If she wants, you guys really work good together, because I'm going to assume, and I'm assuming a lot of things. And Shelby, just leave when you want here. I'll talk for a minute or two if it's cool, and just kind of sum up what I heard. Shelby, you seem to lean a little left. Greg leans a little right. You guys are both probably centristic. You're level-headed people. You banter off of one another really well. The things that I would highlight from this is A, I heard the other day, I don't know if it's factual, but at some time in war, they did a prison study, and every 31st person actually wants to lead or be in charge, every 31st person, which, Greg, I think helps you and I to understand why other people don't want to be their own boss. So very few people actually want to be their own boss. Most people want to be told what to do. Mm-hmm. Secondly, Shelby, you mentioned they have to be in great shape. It reminds me of my accountant. He worked like a dog, but his wife didn't feed him very well. So I would go in sometimes to get my taxes done, and he's blinking in and out of coherency because he's not eating right. Working like a dog, seems to be in good shape, but he's very unhealthy because he's not eating right.
That's his problem. Why didn't he make his own food, the wimp?
Well, no, I get that. I'm not blaming the wife. I'm just saying these people on the ship, you know, that seem in great shape, they fall ill to this for many reasons. They're not eating right, they're not taking their vitamins, they're not taking care of their body, and like Greg said, they're not then taking a cure for the common cold, which I believe this whole thing is. And then thirdly, it reminds me of Greg, is it Sovic, who's the guy running for Senate in Massachusetts? He's from India?
I don't know. I'm not familiar with that. I know who you mean.
He's really awesome.
You've got to go quickly because we got Josie on the line for South of the Border, and we've got
30 more seconds.
His point to this is,
I think concludes everything you guys are talking about, is how much the pharmaceutical industry is lacking money. So what this guy does, and he's a medical guy running for Senate out of Massachusetts.
Right.
He's from India, and he shows you from graphs how much money the pharmaceutical industry is missing, so they're making up for it in vaccines. So this whole thing is so much a push for vaccine sales. I think you'll find it about 6 months, once they're done pushing the vaccine sales, that we come back to normal.
Well, I've done several shows on this. Go ahead, Shelby.
Thank you so much for your feedback. I got to run, but I really appreciate it. I'll talk to you next Tuesday. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. I'm Shelby.
Thanks for coming back.
You're fabulous.
I promise I'll play your theme when you're actually on the line. Thanks, Shelby. Oh, boy, this is so embarrassing. Like I say, we have produced one fairly soon, and these little difficulties will get taken care of. One of the things I've talked about, and Kyle, if you want to go back through some of the shows, that there's a whole timeline that I'm putting together. And the most recent one is that Obama gave Trump a pandemic playbook. And this was this is a week before Trump takes office, back in 2017. So it'd be January 20th, he took office the week before.
I remember.
It's about the same time that Dr. Fascist made that Georgetown University speech saying, well, we think Trump's going to have a pandemic challenge sometime during his administration. Okay, so all this stuff ties in. The Obama wasn't for Trump, because it was really for Dr. Fascist, so they could coordinate the pandemic when they decided to hold it, which was, you know, after Event 201, and, you know, they did that. They played it out in October, ran the scenarios, and then, of course, November, December, you know, the pandemic comes to the United States by, you know, all the folks coming from China, from Wuhan. So we know how all that works. But it's all by design. It all, everything stems from vaccines. The origin in Wuhan is nowhere near as important as the origin of the vaccine, which I believe is Moderna.
Yep.
I think that's where you're going to find the real dirt, and the fact that the year before the virus, nothing but a marketing tool for the vaccine. The virus was tailor-made with gain-of-function research in Wuhan, China, you know, because they couldn't do it here. It was funded illegally with U.S. taxpayer money. And, of course, being done in China, China said, okay, well, we want something for this too. If you're going to use our lab, what you're going to do then is we're going to use it for bioweapons. So they have a bioweapons program going from China, and Dr. Fascist has a marketing plan going. It's the same damn virus, you know, and now people are dying from the vaccines because the protein spikes on the outside of the cells of this messenger RNA are breaking off. They're causing blood clots. And Josie knows from personal experience, she's lost family members to the vaccine. The vaccine at this point is going to be, the vaccine very soon is going to start killing more people than COVID, and that's going to be scary.
And then they'll probably blame it on the COVID, so they'll make it seem like the same thing, which and actually it's the vaccine that's doing. No, you're so right.
Yeah, well, I've got the screenshots from the CDC from a year ago, July, when the death count was like 300, and if the 50 through July 4th, pretty over July 4th of last year, and everything after that is propaganda. All right, let's bring on Josie, and I'll be right back.
She was born in communist Nicaragua. She grew up without shoes or even a toothbrush. She came to the United States by an act of God and incredibly good fortune. She has seen the best of freedom, the worst of tyranny, and suffered the tests of personal tragedy and crisis. She has seen and survived evil waged upon her. Now she runs a successful business. She loves the USA. She is always helping someone, including me. She speaks Spanish as her first language. She goes on missions to Cuba. She is Josie Coffey, and this is the South of the Border Report. Josie has the knowledge, contacts in several countries, and a passion for freedom. She's on a mission to report what's going on, the truth, in all its horror. You may not like what's going on, but you have to learn what's going on, because the future of our nation depends on you doing something about it. And now, Josie Coffey and the South of the Border Report.
Good morning, Josie. Hopefully I get this one right.
Good morning. Good morning,
Brian. Good morning.
I have no idea. Too much is happening, yeah. I made a mistake earlier. It was really funny. I thought Kyle was Shelby calling it because, like I said, the area codes are fairly close. And so I goofed.
Oh, really?
So I played Shelby's theme, you know, and then Kyle says, did you mean me? Somebody in that event.
Oh,
so it's been comedy this morning. But yeah, it was great to have Gene on. Gene's on fire. Gene has gone from the quiet, shy, and retiring life coach to, I'm going to make her a new theme for next week. And then Shelby joined us and Kyle joined us before that. And so it's up to you. If you want to react to anything that's going on in travel, anything I've said, or let us know what's going on, you can extend into the second hour. And then when you're done, going into this whole infrastructure that's been happening. All right. It's yours. Good morning, Josie.
Yes, good morning. Things are heating up in Mexico. 14 people were shot 2 days ago in Reynosa, which is closer to McAllen, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the cartels are responsible for that. They're attacking innocent Mexican citizens over there. So
for what?
What's
their
oh
purpose?
My God. Just,
why are they doing
killing
this?
Anybody they want. Because they want to. Yeah,
so,
it's crazy.
Let me get a picture of this. So the cartels have grown enormously since the Biden insurrection and the open border policy and the billions of dollars that we've spent and the billions that they're taking in from everybody who's coming into the country. I don't know how much money they've made, but they're making like $1 million a day or something or some ridiculous amount of money extorting from people that are crossing into our country illegally. And so have they grown so much from this that they're able to form like, I guess, their own little kingdoms, you know, along the border and the citizens who are subject to that or in their, you know, I guess, territory, their gang territory, are they being killed? Is that what's going on? So it's kind of paint me a picture of what's happening on the border.
They're controlling the cartels with the Muslim terrorist ones are controlling everything, the border. They're controlling Biden. they're even controlling the president from Mexico because people are saying, where is our president? He's not doing anything. Because what's happening is the cartels threaten this policeman, another and another and another. They all are scared to death, literally.
Yeah.
And Biden continues accepting migrants, illegal children. He has what Joe Biden is doing, he's allowing more and more migrant kids to come in. So the cartels are so excited because, you know, they're making so much money because they're getting money from the drugs coming in because a lot of illegals are coming in full of drugs. That's what's happening.
And it's not being confiscated by the Border Patrol, or are these folks that just they bypass Border Patrol and just go straight into the country?
There, many of them are coming, and you don't even know they're coming in.
Okay.
Yeah, it's out of control. We don't have enough people at the border at all to take care of this. And Biden has changed immigration policies to allow more children to come in under 21 years old.
Where do they go?
Crazy.
It's crazy. They come in.
Huh?
Where are the kids going? Are they in place with other families, or where's the, you know, what's Biden doing? Well, what's his government doing with them?
Believe it or not, a lot of people don't believe it, but this is a market for the kids for sex trafficking, organ trafficking,
okay.
And the parents are continuing bringing more kids to the border. They think they're going to come in with their kids, and their kids are being taken. And what's happening is a lot of people that were qualified to apply for political asylum, they're waiting either in Honduras or in Mexico side. But now Biden is paying with our tax money to fly them directly to different areas in Texas or California, you know. So this is a corrupt with our
this
money.
This is insane.
This is sad.
Yeah. Let me bring Kyle in, and then I got a question for you on where the cartels are spending all this money they're making, because I'm curious what they're doing with it, if you know. Kyle, do you have a question for Josie?
Well, I do kind of for both of you. I have kind of an overall thought.
Okay.
I kind of think not microly, but macroly, maybe like Greg, but then again, Greg kind of thinks in every direction. It's all good. macroly, which is a compliment, which is amazing. But macroly, I'm starting to think, okay, I'm hearing what you're saying about Mexico. I'm not doubting it a bit. But I'm thinking to myself, how is that different from America? And what I mean by that is okay, in Mexico they shoot people. I get that. But, you know, it's like when I used to compare the mafia to our government. If you compare the mafia to the government, our own government, you'll find that the mafia, as in Italian mob, is a cleaner, better organization than our government. Our government drops bombs on countries. Our government takes over countries. So if you do the analysis on the mafia versus our government, the mafia is a better entity. So now if I was going to compare Mexico to America, I would compare Mexico as the mafia and America as a government. We're introvertedly controlling everybody. My neighbors are afraid to talk. My neighbor's afraid to speak. My neighbor's afraid to see you on the sidewalk. So in America, are we being more controlled than they are in Mexico? Yes, in Mexico, they're shooting people innocently on the street. Well, they don't shoot them here. They introvertedly kill them in America, i.e., reporters won't report from earlier conversations, as you mentioned, Greg. The reason reporters won't report is if they do report, they end up like Webb with Bush back in the day or anybody with the Clintons today. You can't report. You can't talk. You'll be killed.
Well, I've already made that decision. I'm not backing down. So if and when something happens to me, then I'm hoping one of the rest of the crew will just pick up and carry on. I am not going to back down for this. And like I say, I've already made that decision.
And I'm not personalizing this, Greg.
I understand. It's not against me.
And deep down, you have to personalize things for your own protection. But I'm asking you both in the far as of what's the difference between America and Mexico? I mean, Mexico, I understand they're, you know, it's ugly. They're shooting people. Well, what's the difference?
Mexico's president was elected. The first difference.
Yeah.
Are we sure? Are we sure?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what goes.
Actually, the president from Mexico was bought by our Democrat cartels because that guy I think he can barely read, actually. He's a communist, the
so
president of Mexico.
Yeah.
So there is no difference so far. I haven't heard a difference yet. I haven't heard a difference between Mexico and America. You know what I mean?
Well, there's lots of differences, you know, obviously just in the two different countries. But in terms of political oppression, there may not be. And that's something we should talk about. Chelsea, I want to get back to this question of the money, because we never hear about this. The cartels are taking in millions of dollars. Are they just growing? Are they buying, you know, opium fields? And what are they doing with their money? Do you know?
Well, they invest a lot of the money, like you just said, to make more opium with poppy seeds. And
okay, that was just a guess.
They're stealing. They're stealing a lot of the farmers' properties in Mexico, and they just plant more poppy seeds, and they're buying more machinery. So, I guess they're investing some of that money, but the other one, they live like luxury in their families. You know, I remember some of the cartels sitting in right in front of me at the dentist's office because we were doing all the teeth. One guy was doing, and this is in the 80s, one cartel that was one of our best customer patients, I should say, he spent over $20,000 to do all his teeth, and that was a lot of money. And they used to give us like $500 to $300 tips, so we used to fight who will be assistant.
Who's working on the cartel guy this month?
Oh, yeah.
That's hysterical.
And they used to tell us a lot of stuff. Yeah. That was back in the 80s.
I remember when Daniel Ortega used to fly to the United States just to buy sunglasses. I mean, you know, it's incredible what these people will do. Mm-hmm. You know, communism for you know, luxury for me. And this is what's going on with the Biden insurrection. Look at all those folks there. They love their luxury. They love flying to Switzerland for these meetings. They love doing all this kind of crap. But as far as we're concerned, Harris doesn't even go to the border. But quite frankly, I don't want her there. So that's a whole different thing. What does Mexico think of the policy here? Because this can't be good for them either. You know, the Mexican government, Mexican people have all these people racing through their country, and even their own citizens. You know, you've got a population drain. We've talked about some of the other countries, the smaller places like El Salvador. They're losing too many people. I mean, who's going to do the work? Who's going to be the accountants? Who's going to be the doctors, lawyers? Who's going to, you know, run the grocery stores? Who's going to keep their country going if everybody thinks they can have a better opportunity here? So how about any news from Mexico as far as, you know, population drain? They got a lot more people, but I'm just curious.
Well, the Mexican citizens are very, very angry because of the Biden administration, so-called. Their cities are being, like a lot of them near Tijuana, near McAllen, near all these areas. They're trashing their cities. They're raping some of their kids in school.
Oh,
they're doing their business in the streets. They're bathing in the street with buckets. It is a mess. So the real Mexican citizens, that they don't have any interest coming into America, they're very upset and disappointed because their cities are being destroyed because of Biden and Obama before. Yeah.
Well, why don't they do something about it?
For Trump to come back.
Can they do anything about it, or are they stuck with this, you know, basically communist that you're saying the Democrats installed? Or can the regional governments, like, we're getting some background noise here, so I'm going to start from one of your ones.
Kyle,
is that you?
Whoa. It's not me.
Okay. Oh, that's better.
It's the phone.
And by the way, Greg, just FYI, after being on for 5 or 10 minutes, you started to blink in and out on my end, so there was interference just that way. If you know, I don't know what it was.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah. Well,
and I'm on a landline, just so you know.
Yeah. No, your line sounds good.
The weather in our town. Yeah.
Yeah, that could be it too. Well, Block Talk's not perfect. You know, basically I'm running a worldwide radio show from a computer screen. It's kind of interesting. How we do these kind of things.
It's amazing.
Yeah. It really is, just to be able to have the things that we have here. In fact, I haven't played this for a while. Let me give you my quick PSA on vaccines, and I'll be right back. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. You've all heard those ads for people who have suffered medical or health tragedies, which say you may be entitled to compensation. But if you have suffered injuries or crippling diseases or medical procedures that went horribly wrong, it's not the compensation you need, it's the knowledge you should have had before the condition you suffer from now. So that you are never in that position in the future, I strongly recommend that you do not
get any COVID vaccines. Get informed. Do your own research. For 99.97% of Americans, your natural immunity will give you, at worst, only moderate symptoms of COVID. If you've already had COVID, it's virtually impossible to get it again. There are effective cures for COVID, which will get you completely over the virus. There is no cure for the COVID-19 vaccines. Once you start down the road of DNA modification, there is no going back.
That's
Hopefully, the
only going back is to the grave, and that's why I'm going to be in Miami on Thursday burying my cousin due to COVID vaccine.
Wow.
Very sad. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Josie has personal experience with this, you know. Yeah, it's blood clots. It's, you know, they've lost 5,000 people at least in this country, and those are just the ones reported to the vaccine. I think the vaccines are going to, you know, end up killing. If you take the actual COVID deaths, people who died from COVID, not with it, you're looking at about 40, 50,000 at most, you know, and then I think the vaccines are going to end up.
I believe Judy Mikovits was saying over 50 million will die all over the world.
Yeah, I don't know how you make a prediction
COVID
like that, because, and maybe people will get the message and they'll stop taking it. You know, how are the vaccine drug pushers pushing it as much there? Because they tend not to do it. You know, your fascist, the genocidal, psychopathic vaccine drug pusher is pushing it here because we've got money. Yeah, so we try it. Let me try that again. You know, genocidal, psychopathic vaccine drug pusher. There we go. Took me a while
just
to practice
evil.
That.
I love
evil. Well, yeah, exactly. But I remember reading an article that the Western wealthier nations of Europe, United States, you know, Canada, Australia, places like that, they're pushing the vaccines much more because they have money, as compared to some of the poorer countries like India and Africa, which don't have money, where it's much easier to give people chloroquine. You know, not only are you preventing malaria, you're preventing COVID. And so it's fascinating that those countries get the prevention, the real prevention, and we get this damn awful vaccine. So what's going on in Central America? Are they pushing back to us here? Do you know?
Yes, they're not forcing you to get the vaccine, but they're saying, oh, if you want to travel, like a lot of people from Miami, including my sister, two of my sisters got the vaccine because they want to go to Nicaragua in August. I said, what? I was so angry. I was so angry because they got the vaccine. And one of my sisters just got one, and I stopped her from getting the second one. So she's not getting the second one. But she convinced my other sister, well, if you're going to go to Nicaragua, you better get the vaccine. It's so stupid. And, you know, now it's a money-making machine, the COVID test.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to go to Nicaragua, the government gets $150 for you to come in and $150 for you to get out, because you have to have two tests, one coming in, one coming out. Within
isn't that interesting?
15-minute results.
How long, 50 minutes?
15 minutes.
Oh, interesting.
You have to have it right then and there. It is so stupid, because my sister did one like 2 days, and they took 3-4 days in Miami to give her the result, and then the airline says, oh, no, you have to have it right now. So they're making all this money, $150 per test in your nose.
Well, what's with the airlines, too? I want to talk to Shelby about that as well, but you look at the airlines. You know, here you are in an enclosed space. Wearing masks is ridiculous because the air is recirculated anyway. You know, you're pressurizing to 8,000 feet, so you've already got a reduced oxygen content to the air. Instead of the normal 22, it's like, what, 19 or 20%, whatever. It's reduced enough. That's why if you have a drink on an airplane, it knocks on your butt because you've got less oxygen to metabolize it. So you're putting masks on people, which is their oxygen intake. You've got a reduced oxygen environment. Sterile environment anyway, and the idea that any particular virus is floating around, any number of viruses have been floating around and have been floating around in that airplane, in airplanes for years. The biggest thing is they don't recycle the air like they used to. You didn't have these problems back with the old 707 and 727s because they replaced the air all the time. It was always fresh air. You had air coming in from the jet engine, from the there's an intake, not the jet itself, but near there they have an intake which comes in. The air is warmed up, sent into the cabin, and it goes out the back end. So it comes in the front end, goes to the back end. Now they recycle it because it's cheaper. and the engines get more power because they're not bleeding off some air for you know, breathing. But it's still the same problem that the airlines, you know, I don't know what they're doing. What they're doing makes no sense because wearing a mask in an enclosed environment that close is ridiculous. It's like wearing a mask on a subway. Masks don't work.
And you sit bumper to bumper. You're touching your neighbor's elbow when you're sitting in an airline. So it is the most ridiculous stupidity.
Yeah, but the government transportation systems, the government systems like the subways and the buses, it can be packed far closer than they are on the airlines. They're still going. They require masks on public. Kyle?
You're, just so you know, am I coming through clear right now?
Yeah, you're fine. There's a little scratching in the background, but it's not enough to you know, cause me any grief. But, yeah, you're fine.
Well, because I'm sitting perfectly still on a recliner here, so I don't know where the scratchy would be
coming
from. And
he's in
a
recliner.
Yeah,
I want you to be
at
ease when you call in.
Well, you know what I mean. But by all means, my God, I'm giving you my wisdom for free. My God.
Oh,
anyway, my point is that when you're coming at me, it's still broken up. I'm just giving you a little feedback here. And to be perfect is not the point here. The more imperfect you are, is actually doing you justice. So the you know, just remember that. I mean, we all, Gunn and I just did our show for 4 months, and then we're taking a break, and I'm looking back at it. And anyway, the perfection is not the point. The point is how much wisdom you're sharing and how wonderful your show is, however you get that to people. Here's my question for the two of you. This thing that they're stuffing up your nose and checking you on a test, I thought of this after I had my hip done because I would never take a test. I never do any of this stuff. I never do a vaccine, none of this. I don't believe in any of this stuff. And I actually had to have a test to get in to the hospital to have my hip done, and I got out of the nose thing because I have a deviated septum, so I got out of that. So they stuck the swab up my throat instead. But here's my question. Where is that swab coming from?
China.
China. Where'd the disease come from?
China.
Who are the masks and all the protective
equipment?
They
have thousands and thousands of those tests ready to go before the virus even came out. They were ready to go. And they're putting some chemical in the tip of those tests, and some of them have nanochips to go up in the canal of your nose. It is bad.
I don't know about I don't know about the chips yet. That's I'm still a little skeptical about that. But China did buy up all the protective equipment around the world. I mean, China knew this was coming. I think that was part of the deal for using the Wuhan lab. So Dr. Fauci is so blind in his obsessions, you know, that he told China, here's what we're doing. You know, I'm sure he talks to Xi Jinping or whatever the Dr. Fascist equivalent is in the Chinese Communist Party. He said, we want to do this. We want to release it during, you know, Trump's administration. We want to, you know, have this in the election year. And they're like, great. Well, if you're going to do that and you want to use our lab, then, okay, we want the market on the equipment. We want more on all kinds of stuff, and we want to fire weapons to the army. I bet you that's what happened. Kyle?
And to add to all of your points earlier, that you see everybody that was involved in all their reasons, right? China, this, that, Obama, Fauci. Don't forget, China conveniently gets rid of their elderly, you know, and or the world gets rid of their elderly. You know, unbelievable.
So does Cuomo in the nursing homes. You know, that's what that's all about.
Yeah.
You know, that's what socialism does. They kill off the old people. You know, once you stop making money and stop paying taxes, they don't need you anymore. You know, I remember when I was in East Germany, the one day I spent there, and I got the confidence of a couple of, young folks like myself, and they told me, they said, look, once you're 65, you can travel anywhere. In fact, they encourage you to leave. They don't want to pay for you anymore. You're only valuable to them when you're earning money during your productive years. And that's why no one was traveling out of communist East Germany. And so they weren't paying taxes until they were retired. Okay, just to see if you have anything else for your report. I want to switch over to another topic, our infrastructure.
Yeah, I want to finish a couple seconds.
Yeah, go ahead, please. No, it's okay. Take your time.
Lots of people from Venezuela are fleeing to Spain, Chile, Peru, Ecuador, and then they're flying directly to Mexico because a lot of them are not coming straight this way, so they're flying to all those different countries and then there's so many at the border right now, Venezuelan people trying to get in.
So are you saying they're going to these other countries first and then they're coming here? They're not coming straight from Venezuela, huh?
Most of them are going to other countries first, and then they find their way to Mexico, fly directly to Mexico City, and then to get in with political asylum.
You know, when you've got a perfectly good, other countries in Central America, Central and South America, well, South America, at least, that are doing fine. I mean, some places like Ecuador and Argentina and Chile and some of these other places, they're doing. Why would you go from Venezuela to the United States when you can go to, a Spanish-speaking country, for example, or Spain? What's wrong with if you're going to Spain? Why not stay there? Spain's kind of cool. Why come to the United States?
Well, if you go to Spain, anywhere in Spain, and I've been there.
Uh-huh.
You have to work in order to eat. You don't get everything for free.
What a concept. Didn't we used to have that? I think we had that under Gingrich and Clinton.
That's
true. Actually had work there. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
That's so geniusly simple. Yeah.
Yep. They know in America you get everything. Why stay in Spain or Peru or Chile? You're going to have to work hard over there.
Greg, can you confirm? I heard the other day that in California, it's actually worse in Massachusetts, but in California, you have to make $104,000 a year to get more than you get on welfare.
I don't know what the actual figures are. Cato did a study on that, and I wrote a piece several years ago called The Conservative View of the Minimum Wage. And what I came up with was something called Total income index or something like that. And what I did was I took Section 8 and tax breaks and credits and welfare and food stamps and just outright cash payments and all the welfare that was available. And I actually calculated it out to be an hourly wage. And I think, Mississippi had the lowest and Hawaii had the highest. Hawaii, you're making like the equivalent, at least then, was like $50 an hour. It's probably $60 an hour now, just in welfare. So yeah, that makes sense. You figure calculate $60 an hour out. What's that? 6 times 4 is 24. That's 2,400 a week. We'll say that's 2,500. Make it easy. So 2,500 a week. 2,500 a month times 10 is 25. No, wait a minute. Anyway, no, it's more than that. 2,500 a week is how much a month?
Well, you got 52 weeks times 40. What an hour?
Well, if you 2,500 a week, that's 10.
That's $124,000.
Okay, so there you go.
$125,000. So this
that's about right.
Greg, I bet it's right. This guy,
like
did a study on it. $104,000 you would have to make in California to make more than people mooching off of all the collective things, just like you talked about.
Yep, I think that's about right. And I'll dig out my old study, but yeah, the numbers. Look at the Cato Institute because they're the ones that did the big study on it. Total revenue index. So what I came up with was a new measure called the total revenue index. In other words, when people say, well, minimum wage isn't enough to live on, well, let's take a look at the total revenue index. How much is a person actually getting? With a minimum wage job, you can still qualify for Section 8, food stamps, the child tax credit, multiple child tax credits, other welfare, other cash payments, other subsidies, free this, free that, and everything else. And so if you take into account minimum wage plus everything that a particular person is eligible to, convert that into an hourly wage, you get their total revenue index. In other words, the actual revenue that they're getting, not just the minimum wage. And you'll find that people on minimum wage can make far more in minimum wage plus government benefits. And that's what we're talking about here. So the idea of measuring, a livable minimum wage is stupid because they already have a minimum wage plus everything else, especially if they have a family. That makes a lot of sense.
This guy's report concluded that I think it was $134,000 in like Massachusetts. So just to make sure the audience is comprehending this because it's so unbelievable, but for some it might not be.
Yeah.
Those listening. $134,000 you would have to be making – the unemployed get the make – so in other words, somebody would have to offer you a job for $150,000 in Massachusetts to make more money than you can make doing nothing.
Right. So the difference between the people who are making the welfare amount – people that believe in work and don't believe in taking – let's talk about to what's the going rate, what's the going wage in say, Costa Rica right now? Oh, actually, that's not a good example because a lot of Costa Ricans are staying there. Honduras. Chelsea, do you know what the average wage is in some of these countries, Honduras, Guatemala, El Salvador, how much people are making a year in U.S.
from
dollars?
Where I'm from, like in Nicaragua and all those places, it's right. like a few dollars a day that people make, unless you're okay. an executive from a bank or a doctor and all that. That's a different story. But
okay.
the average poor people, they make a few dollars a day. That's why a lot of the companies in the United States have a lot of factories in Nicaragua, in El Salvador, especially in Mexico, to make all the clothing because they only pay a few dollars a day to the people. Yes.
Yeah, Trump was trying to change that by taxing companies, American companies, that set up in other countries for the sole purpose of cheap labor. He taxed that. He put a tariff on those goods so it would be equivalent to the making in the United States with U.S. labor, which is a perfectly good idea. I'm sure Biden has rescinded that and hasn't made the news yet, but I can look into that. But, yeah, if you've got people that are making a few dollars a day and they can make $100,000 on American welfare for doing nothing, now you know why people come here.
Yeah,
that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
That's why I asked you. Yeah. Huh.
And
Jesse, go ahead.
To your, Greg, just real quick, to your point.
Go ahead.
And then I want to move on to a different subject, but let's get Jesse's question back to you. Jesse?
And the crazy thing is, when you go to Nicaragua, you have to pay in dollars now. So it's very expensive when you're over there. My sister, when I was in Nicaragua last time, I had to bring almost $4,000 in order to make it over there. You know, it's so stupid because they know you're bringing dollars. I don't know.
That's communism for the people, capitalism for the leaders, which is what we said before. Kyle, what was your point? Yeah.
Well, I heard earlier or whatever, I read that a while back, what you're talking about with Trump and how I perceived it, and you just kind of touched on it, but how I perceived it was, is that, yes, he wanted to make every country get their comfortable minimum wage, whether it was like America's $15 or $4 or $7 or $10, but make it so that all countries would be equal. All countries would have it, however you want to verbalize it, have a, more of a chance to make an honest living.
I don't remember that, but it doesn't mean it certainly didn't happen. All right, and put your
No,
hold
I'm
for
saying
about,
what you were saying. I'm just saying it in a different way, Greg. What you said earlier is exactly what I just said in my own goofy way, but basically Trump wanted to stick up for people in China in whatever country so they weren't paid like peasants.
Yeah, and also to have not have companies go to places where they could pay people like peasants and then sell the goods to Americans at, you know, at the rates here and make that exorbitant money. Okay, I got something to play for you guys. We have a new sponsor, Santa Rosa Volunteers. And so they're sponsoring me to do a bunch of articles or actually episodes of our founding documents. So I'm going to bring you both back in about 4 or 5 minutes. Take a break. If you can stay on the line, great. If not, then we'll catch you next time. But let me play this for now, and I'll be back. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. So now we go back to the beginning. Federalist Paper Number 1, written by Alexander Hamilton, October 27th, 1787. According to federalistpapers.org, the Federalist Papers are 85 articles advocating the ratification of the Constitution. They remain the primary source for interpretation of the Constitution, both to influence the vote in favor of ratification and to shape future interpretations of the Constitution. Here's the problem. Although you will find such statements in any number of other sources, including this one, the idea that the Constitution needed to be interpreted either then, now, or in the future is completely bogus. The strength of the Constitution is that it is written in plain language with many absolutes which raise no questions, such that no interpretation of any kind is necessary, simply a reading and application as written. Hamilton, in the first paragraph of Federalist Number 1, asks this critical question, whether societies of men are really capable or not of establishing good government from reflection and choice, or whether they are forever destined to depend for their political constitutions on accident and force. Before that question is asked, in the first paragraph of Federalist 1, comes the reason the answer is critical. Hamilton says, the subject speaks its own importance, comprehending in its consequences nothing less than the existence of the Union, the safety and welfare of the parts of which it is composed, the fate of an empire in many respects the most interesting in the world. Hamilton is saying in Federalist 1 that there are two possible outcomes with the Constitution. Either it gets ratified and a union of the separate states into the United States is established, or the states will break down into various groupings of separate nations, much like Europe, where the countries are divided and worse off than they were here under the Articles of Confederation. Hamilton concludes Federalist Number 1 with this statement, which is the rationale for all the other Federalist papers that follow. For nothing can be more evident to those who are able to take an enlarged view of the subject than the alternative of an adoption of the new Constitution or a dismemberment of the Union. It will therefore be of use to begin by examining the advantages of that Union, the certain evils, and the probable dangers to which every state will be exposed from its dissolution. This shall accordingly constitute the subject of my next address. Before continuing with Hamilton's discussions, I shall introduce you to the anti-Federalist papers, which were all the arguments against the ratification of the Constitution, starting with Anti-Federalist Number 1. A source for this report is federalistpapers.org. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio. All right, so we're live again. We've got Kyle out in Sacramento, California. We've got Josie right here. And I've got something that I found rather interesting. So the title of the show today, 16 Secret Off-Limits Targets Biden Gave to Putin, Found Online. Because if you all remember that ridiculous summit that Biden went to and looked like a total moron, I think it was all by design. I mean, you know, he's like the scapegoat. And you can't blame him for anything that's happening because he's a doddering old man. But the people that are really causing the harm, you know, you don't know who they are. So those are the people you want to blame, but you can't because you don't know who they are. So you blame Biden, but you can't blame Biden because he doesn't know what he's doing. So either way, the Democrats win. Anyway, I thought about this. I thought, well, what are these 16 secret areas or 16, you know, critical infrastructure areas that Biden gave? That's like that old nursery rhyme, you know, don't throw me into the briar patch, the rabbit said as he ran away into the briar patch. You know, it's that same kind of reverse logic. It's stupid. And I thought, well, why would he do that? And then I said, well, what are the 16? And I looked through many, many reports on the 16 items of our critical infrastructure, and none of the articles listed what they were. So I'm stumbling around, I'm fooling around, I'm looking through, you know, page 3, page 4, where the real stories are on a particular issue, and I found this thing here, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. Did you folks know that the U.S. government has a Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency? Kyle?
Well, I can imagine. They've got a vid for that. Oh, by the way, after I get done here, I'm gonna call you back because you're still coming in at me broken up.
Oh, okay.
Me
should
too.
I'm broken up to you?
It's broken up. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's weird. Huh.
And it's all good. I'm just trying to be helpful here. So I'll in a little bit, when I hang up, don't worry about it, and I'll just call you right back and see if that helps.
Well, no, I just turned my gain down a little bit lower. Does that make a difference?
I think it's great because we had a lot of rain here in Milton. So, yeah. I think it's great.
Huh. Are you getting enough words so that it makes sense, or is it all breaking up and sound correctly?
Yeah, it goes on and off.
Yeah. Huh. I mean, you're from, like I said, from the time I called for the first 5 or 10 minutes, it was perfect. And then it's been every once in a while intermittently broken up.
Yeah.
But, yes, you can get the gist of it. But, yeah, it just sounds like it's a little bit of a bad connection or something.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'll try and speak a little quietly. I've backed off the mic a bit, and I've turned the gain down a bit. I mean, I keep turning it down. You know, at some point, I'm not going to be heard. The whole purpose of having a microphone is so that I don't have to sound like I'm on a phone. That's interesting.
What's the gain you're talking about? What do you mean?
Gain, G-A-I-N. It's a setting on the microphone. It's the power of the mic. It's the power of the signal going into the computer. And so I keep turning it down. I had it down so low, the callers actually sounded, I was the quiet one. The callers were louder. And I thought, well, that's not going to work. Anyway, I'll talk to Blog Talk because they have problems. But in the meantime, we've got about 34 minutes left. So let's play around with this government agency, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. And it says here, critical infrastructure sectors. There are 16 critical infrastructure sectors whose assets, systems, and networks, whether physical or virtual, are considered so vital to the United States that their incapacitation or destruction would have a debilitating effect on security, national economic security, national public health or safety, or any combination thereof. Presidential Policy Directive 21, PPD 21, in parentheses, Critical Infrastructure Security and Resilience advances a national policy to strengthen and maintain secure, functioning, and resilient critical infrastructure. This directive supersedes Homeland Security Presidential Directive 7, whatever that is. Anyway, my question is, why would the government be publishing the 16 most critical elements of our infrastructure for the world? If there is cybersecurity, this is the least cybersecure thing I think they could have done. This makes no sense. How about you folks?
Well, Democrats are in charge. Why would you consider it to make sense?
The last update was, let me see what the last update was. I think it was, October 21st, 2020. So Trump was still, it was before the election. They updated this thing. Interesting.
Well,
I think the
fun point was too when Putin's really good at this. But they gave Putin crap for killing people or whatever, over there. Mm-hmm. They made themselves sound macho by saying, "Well, you get rid of any whatever." And he said, "Well, did you guys have fun making up the January 6th event there at the Capitol? And by the way, did the cop conveniently kill that lady on purpose? And did you ever look into that?" He called them on all their BS. It was beautiful, but of course, you never see that in the real. You never see that in the real news,
or the public news. One American news reported it. But I think it's
that's
classic.
A good news source. I'm talking about the BS ones, CNN, Fox, the ones that too many people still listen to. They, You don't see it.
No. In fact, the funny thing is Putin was right. In fact, China was doing the same thing too. Talk about American racism. Look how racist you are. They're using, the Democrat racism against us. Let me give you the sectors that are critical for our infrastructure. Chemical sector, oil, gas, petrochemicals, things like that. Commercial facilities. That's all your shopping malls and all kinds of, businesses, things like that. Communications. What, the internet? Everything associated. Critical manufacturing. Dams sector. They have a thing on dams, so there's our whole water supply. Defense industrial base sector, so all your military contractors, everything associated with our military. Emergency services sector. They've got an energy sector. That would be, I can just imagine. It's like the Colonial Pipeline, and then, of course, all the nuke plants and everything else like that. They got the financial services sector. Yeah, I'm sure that's going to be doing well with a ransomware attack. Food and agriculture? Well, there's your food supply. Government facilities? Well, yeah, I can worry. If they want to attack that one, that one's okay. Healthcare and public health sector? Information technology sector? Nuclear? Oh, they even have a separate one here. Nuclear reactors, materials, and waste sector? Water and wastewater system sector? And transportation system sector? So all these sectors, 1, 2, 3, 4, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Yep, that's Biden gave to Putin, and it was already out, you know, at least five doctors come from that, that the government publishes the very things, the very means to attack us. I don't understand
Greg,
any of this.
Greg, 15
no
seconds
sense.
Ago, you started breaking up. 15 seconds ago, you started yeah. breaking up. It's
yeah.
FYI.
Oh, okay. Let me repeat this again, just in case you missed it. The 16 sectors that are here that they talk about, chemical, commercial facilities, communications, critical manufacturing, dams, defense industrial base, emergency services, energy sector, financial services sector, food and agriculture, government facilities, healthcare and public health, information technology, nuclear reactors, transportation, water and wastewater. That's like everything we have that makes the country work. And yet they publish this list. These are our critical cybersecurity and infrastructure security things, and this agency is telling everybody what they are, where they are. They might as well just say, here's how you cancel each one of them. Well, I should take a look. I haven't read all these yet because I just found this, you know, late last night. But so let's take a look at the healthcare one, because, you know, if you know anything that's happened with the whole thing with COVID, that's been a disaster. And I wonder how much of that has been I don't know if it's been computer hacked or not. It says the healthcare and public health sector protects all sectors of the economy from hazards such as terrorism, infectious disease outbreaks, and natural disasters. Well, wait a minute. Where were you when COVID came out? And why weren't they there to tell the truth about it? It says because the vast majority of the sector's assets are privately owned and operated, collaboration and information sharing between the public and private sectors is essential to increasing resilience of the nation's healthcare and public health critical infrastructure. Well, isn't that fascinating? Maybe I should look into that with all the propaganda that went out on COVID. Maybe this government agency has had a part in it. Wouldn't that be interesting? Huh.
That's funny.
Can you guys still hear me? Yeah.
Yep.
Well,
I can hear you.
Okay, good. Well, let me say something else I found. All right. This is the IST, the Institute for Security and Technology. This is it's the Ransomware Task Force. Now, the two things that happened of late. One, the Colonial Pipeline was shut down, and two, Southwest Airlines lost their computers for, booking flights. Now, does anybody know why the Colonial Pipeline was shut down? Come on, kids. Who wants to take a chance? Why was the pipeline?
You're breaking up in the last 10 seconds.
Ah, darn it. This is so frustrating. I'm going to call Blog Talk after the show and figure out what's going on. Okay, so the question is, why was the Colonial Pipeline shut down? Everyone
it didn't help.
Give
me slowly. I'm gonna hang up and call you right back. We'll see if that increases. Jesse, you stay on. I'm going to hang up. Hold on.
All right.
I guess you're Jesse now. No, I'm just teasing you. Yeah. All right.
That's okay.
Yeah. Okay. Well, here's the funny. The this is from a website, Jalopnik, and what they were saying, and the same thing I found this in The Sun, a British press, it says the cyber attack that shut down the Colonial Pipeline, causing a gas panic and stoking fears of gasoline shortages, didn't actually shut down the pipeline. It impacted the billing system at the Colonial Pipeline Company, which shut it down because they were worried about how they'd collect payments. So the reason they shut down the pipeline, the reason they shut it down, was because their billing system had been attacked. Didn't hear that on the news, did you?
No.
Kyle's laughing. Yeah.
Well,
so that's it.
I just want to remind people that this is Action Radio, and the best action that you folks can take that are listening is get involved, be an adult, consider registering as an independent or a Republican, because anything the Democratic Party does today, I'm not talking about folks your Democratic Party of 30 and 70 years ago, I'm talking about in the last 10 or 20 years, is frightening. It's evil and is scary. So please consider registering as an independent or Republican and voting accordingly, usually as an independent or Republican. Please don't do anything democratically, because as Greg is pointing out so eloquently here, they are a disaster.
Well, I'm looking for ways to abolish the Democrat Party because, you know, you can trace 99%, well, actually 90% of our problems to the Democrats and the other 10% to the Republicans who go along with them. Anyway,
yep.
Southwest Airlines, this is from the New York Post, grounds its entire fleet amid giant computer outage, okay? Southwest Airlines grounded flights across the United States, across the country Tuesday for the second time in less than 24 hours. And this is from June 15th, okay? So this is just like a week or so ago. Southwest grounds their airlines because of a computer problem. The Colonial Pipeline is shut because of a billing problem. That happened. This report is May 17th. Now, here's where it gets really interesting. Before that, this ransomware task force had a huge meeting. It sort of reminds me of Event 201. Let me tell you about these guys. The ransomware task force, you know, the Institute for Security and Technology, in partnership with a broad coalition of experts in industry, government, law enforcement, civil society, and international organizations who participated in the ransomware task force, has released a comprehensive framework to combat ransomware. The RTF, that's the Ransomware Task Force, hosted an online launch event on April 29th, 2021. Does anybody find it interesting that the Ransomware Task Force hosted an online launch event on April 29th, and then just within a month or two, the Colonial Pipeline shuts down in May, and Southwest shuts down in June, all because of computer problems, probably ransomware related. Does anybody find that interesting? I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
Kyle?
Well, Greg, I don't follow this and haven't to the degree that your mind does, but the thing that it makes me think of is after we, they, our own government, whoever you want to say, killed JFK, they then put those same people in charge of the investigation into who killed them. So what do you think's going to happen? You think they're going to expose themselves? So when I think of what you're talking about here, you're way over my head. But I'm thinking to myself, well, who's gonna report these people? 80 to 90% of Washington D.C. is in on it. I mean, they're all globalists slash deep state slash the swamp. So who's gonna undercover the swamp?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, let me tell you who's part of the ransomware task force. This might make it a little clearer. I think this is like Event 201. It just hasn't hit the news yet. So like most
things. What's 201? What do you mean by that?
All right, Event 201 is an event that took place right before the alleged pandemic, which we call the plandemic because of Dr. Judy Mikovits, who was on the show. You should check back and listen to a couple of her shows that she was on.
I know her.
Okay. Well, a bunch of folks got together, information people, news people, social media people, you know, the World Economic Forum. Now, why the World Economic Forum held a pandemic exercise is rather unusual since they're not a health department, and a pandemic is a health crisis, not an economic crisis. Except that Event 201 planned out everything they were going to do during the what we call the pandemic. And then one of the most important things was managing information, was propagandizing information. What I found out later was that Facebook basically paid for Event 201, and Facebook cooperated with Dr. Fascist to coordinate all the information so people would be led to vaccines and away from cures, and people would not understand what's going on. And Trump was led to ventilators and vaccines, totally distracted by the coronavirus task force, which I think originated with Obama's, you know, pandemic playbook. So most of this comes back to Obama and Dr. Fascist in terms of vaccines. Obama wants power. You know, Dr. Fascist wants money. China wants bioweapons. Everybody gets what they want, and Americans die by the hundreds of thousands. And we have a genocide going on in this country, you know, and some, you know, by the people that are withholding information. But just this little bit here, this little, you know, this ransomware task force, I just find it interesting. You know me, I like to connect the dots. Why did the Colonial Pipeline shut down? Well, they had a billing problem. Why did Southwest Airlines shut down? Well, they had a computer, I guess, booking glitch. Why did the ransomware, you know, event take place immediately before those two things happened? That to me is more than a coincidence. Okay. So let me tell you who I found on this ransomware task force. Amazon Web Services. Let me see what we got here. CFC Underwriting. I don't know who they are. Cisco. Well, that's interesting. The Cyber Peace Institute. Well, that sounds like a front company for all kinds of things. Deloitte, I guess they're the accounting firm. Ernst & Young, there's another accounting firm. McAfee, Microsoft, there's a name we know. National Governors Association, New York Department of Finance Services. What else do we have here? See, well, Royal Canadian Mounted Police, the Mounties are in on this. The Shadow Server Foundation, who are they? It's an interesting thing. The University of Oxford Blavatnik School of Government. UK National Cybersecurity folks. The security agency, the CISA, that's the one I told you about who published the infrastructure thing. So they're in this task force too. The FBI is there, like any good coup organization. The Secret Service is there and some other folks. I just find this interesting. You know, they're all connected. Who's got questions? Anything that I talked about? Because this is
I'd like to kind of put my simplicity to it of what you're brilliantly pointing out here.
Well,
what
you.
I've been reminded of is that, and everybody thinks that we can't do anything about something, and I'm realizing it's so not true. For instance, the Second Amendment puts the people in charge. There's 100 million people at least that own guns, and it's believed that there's a billion, and I repeat, a billion guns in America. So that makes the people of this country in charge, as you know, Greg. And so we, by the Second Amendment, we are actually in charge each and every day, because if we get upset enough, we will take our government back by force, which we don't want to do. We're peaceful people, but we are gun owners for that reason, that we're in charge. So often we think that somebody else is in charge and somebody's controlling us, and they do as long as we allow that, and I guess we put up with a lot. But anyway, so it makes me think of, okay, the globalists, or I call them globalists, there's 500 wealthy people, right? So a globalist goes to Vegas, i.e. Bill Gates. Bill Gates goes to Vegas and gives a speech. Well, he gives a speech on, let's just say, what you were talking about earlier, about this 201, was it?
Oh, event 201. Yeah, I think he was there.
Okay,
he
so let's just say Bill Gates goes to this. Let's just use this as an example. And this is how the globalists end up in charge, but we allow it. And everybody needs to know that we allow this. Because Bill Gates goes to Vegas, gives a 201 speech, let's just say it was somebody else, but let's just say that was the case, whoever it was. Doesn't matter. One of the globalists gives it. And then the rest of the globalists join in. So all those people you mentioned earlier, McAfee, all those people are probably globalists, which means they're capable of making masses amount of money, or they're tied in with the masses of amount of money. So all of a sudden, whoever it is that went to Vegas, started this 201 speech, everybody kind of joins in from the globalist level because they want to be in on it and they want to make money. But we
are in charge. It was an actual event. I get it.
I'm just reminding the public that's listening that we don't have to allow this, i.e. 5G. If a globalist goes to whatever and starts 5G, the rest of the globalists are going to join in to 5G, and they're going to create it all over the world if we allow it. But we can stop 5G from happening. 5G is out there, and I don't mean to go off of your subject, but 5G is in our country now. It's all around us, but it hasn't been nearly set up. We can still stop 5G, just like we can stop the vaccines. We can stop the rest of us from taking vaccines. We can stop the rest of us from getting any more 5G. We, the people, can stop just about anything we want to if we remain involved and join the PTA, do little things, become a governor, get involved, become a mayor, just help somebody, give a speech, be you, be involved.
Yeah. But the biggest problem is, well, exactly. This is the whole purpose behind the show. But the biggest problem is that you have, you know, several hundred million gun owners and a billion guns out there, but the gun owners are disorganized. They're not working as a unit, whereas the government is organized and does work as a unit. It was only 2% of Germany were Nazi party members, yet they ran the country and they won the election. Okay,
correct. But they also took all the guns away.
Well, I know that.
Yeah, that was able to happen.
Right, let me finish my point though, because what I'm saying is it's the organization that makes the difference. Now I'm not advocating.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the guns are less. I always see guns as a defense, not an offense. And what it sounds like you're talking about is using the guns to take back the government as an offensive move. That, I think, is a huge mistake because
Don't put words in my mouth. Do not put words in my mouth.
Okay, this is just how I'm hearing it.
Like this. That's
okay,
fine. You're not hearing it correctly. You weren't listening correctly. What I'm saying basically is exactly what you're saying, but just in a different way. The Second Amendment was put into place. Basically, I'm going to read the Second Amendment to both of them because you know what it means, but I just want to read it from a book I have. Second Amendment says, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
Right, I know.
So
that.
All that means is a militia is a peaceful organization that keeps its government in check. And if its government gets out of hand, if its government goes too far, it is the job of a militia to take over anything that is messing with the people.
Yeah. Yeah,
so
it's not offensive.
It's not. I'm not suggesting that those guns are there for offense. You're exactly right. It's defensive. I mentioned once, if I mentioned twice, peaceful militia. But a peaceful militia, if you piss it off, you're done, government. You're done, you know, whomever's listening. You're done, globalists. And they know that. That's why they want to slowly take our guns away, is because they want to do maybe what they did in Germany and other countries, i.e. Australia. They want to depower us and empower themselves. My point to you is we're on the same page. We're saying the same thing, maybe in a different way. But that's what America needs to realize. America is in charge. The people of this country are in charge because of the Second Amendment.
No, I agree with you. The people are in charge. I think the Second Amendment. Justin, why don't you go ahead and make a comment? Yeah. Then I want to sort of respond.
I agree. Yeah.
Okay. I
didn't mean to bark out. I just want to make sure when a show is national. I mean, if you're in Florida and I'm in California, you know, this is not only national, but you're making it a worldly show. I just want to make sure that I'm making
myself clear. No, it is. We're heard in a lot of different countries. What's ironic is that China has dropped off the map. So the Communist Party of China has decided that nobody in China can hear Action Radio anymore. It's true.
You can tell that?
Oh, I know. Yeah, I got a world map.
I'm asking you, Greg. That's a question. You can tell that China dropped off?
Yeah, absolutely. I got a world map. I know every country that listens and every country that doesn't. And it may only be one person in that country, but it's amazing what I have. Hey, we got listeners in Bangladesh. We got listeners in Nepal. We've got listeners in Vietnam. We've got most of Asia, actually, South Korea, Taiwan, the Philippines, Malaysia. We've got listeners in New Zealand, Australia. We've got Eastern and Western Europe. We've got Russia. We've got most of South America, a lot of Central America, and several countries of which we have several countries in Africa. We've got Egypt.
Wow.
We've got United Arab Emirates. We've got Israel. We've got Slovenia. We've got Bulgaria, Romania, Poland, the Czech Republic. We've got Iceland. They're new, actually. Iceland's fairly new. You know, but we've been heard in amazing places, and countries come and go, depending on who's listening. Most of the listeners in the United States, and the other big countries are Canada, England, Australia, and Israel. That's where we have our biggest audience. Yeah. Anyway, so let's get back to the Second Amendment. And the reason for bills, citizen legislation, the reason I'm doing this is to provide a third way between bullets and ballots. Okay, ballots are good, but we know they can be stolen now. All right, I mean, the presidency can be stolen, so that's obvious to us. Bullets is the last resort, so we didn't want to go there. But unless you have other options, you know, it doesn't leave a lot of room between a stolen election and bullets. And so, bills, citizen legislation, I believe, is the way to go. And one of the things that we've never really explored is government disarmament. Okay, everybody talks about, well, we got to keep the people armed, which is true. Any infringement on the right to keep and bear arms, including, you know, a concealed carry permit, is an infringement, is unconstitutional. We know all that. But the problem is the government has too many guns. The government has the problem. And if we, you know, if we work on disarming the government, they're not going to be as big a problem, and they're going to be in an even weaker position to try and disarm us. And no one seems to be talking about that. So that's one of the bills I have in process, that and also state citizenship requirements so that illegal aliens can't live there. You know, there's a bunch of things. We've got many legal theories that we'll be advancing here soon. But what do you guys think about the idea of disarming the government, of what I call defense equality? And whether it's the local police department or the federal government, no government entity can be better armed than the people that in their jurisdiction, whether that's federal or whether that's local police department. Defense equality. The people have to be at least equally or preferably better armed than the government entities within their jurisdiction. Defense equality. Disarming the government. Who's in?
Go ahead, Jesse.
Well,
Jesse, you want to go first?
Opinion,
yeah.
My opinion is that's not going to happen, of course. But you cannot disarm the government.
Why, of course?
Because other countries will want to come and take advantage if they
find
out.
No, I didn't say the military. I didn't say the military. Oh. I'm not touching the military. I want the military to have more and better arms. I'm talking about the government. I'm talking about the bureaucracies. I'm talking about why does the Department of Education have a SWAT team? Why does the FBI even exist? There's nothing in the Constitution about a federal police force. And look what they did.
Yeah.
There are a bunch of.
So you're talking like you're talking like the guy that shot the gal coming in on January 6th.
Absolutely. What I'm saying is that there are massive government departments, from the IRS to the FBI to the Energy Department to every other entity, to you know, that are exercising authority they have no justification to exercise. The Obama administration brought in thousands upon thousands of new federally armed agents, and they bought thousands and thousands of weapons and billions of rounds of ammunition. That was one of the last great stories by Alex Jones before they took him off. Okay, so the federal government I don't see any department other than the military that should have guns at all in the federal department. Besides, the IRS can do what they want by computer. What do they need arms for? You know, I mean, I don't understand. State revenue, that's different. But the police powers are within the state. They're not at the federal government level. So why there are any federally armed agents of any kind makes no sense to me, especially the FBI. Look at Waco. That just, they should have been disarmed after Waco. So should the ATF.
Yeah.
The ATF should have been, both of them should have been abolished after Waco for what they did. Okay. And Bill Clinton never has stood trial for that. But you want to talk about events in our history, and we're going to have another one now. I've got stories coming up on the water. Let me bring this one out too. There's remember the Bundys, the Bundy Ranch, where they were grazing on federal land, and the federal government said, oh, can't do that anymore. You know, they took the land away, and a bunch of folks showed up with guns. So you want to talk about Second Amendment? That worked because people showed up with guns, and they protected the Bundys, and they protected the other folks, and they turned back the Bureau of Land Management. So why do we have a Bureau of Land Management? Why isn't that state land? Okay. So another thing to talk about, and this is upcoming too, we have, you know, all these things are in my head in process, is to create a law by which the states either take back or the government gives back all land they control within a state. Because the only land the government can control by the Constitution is land under military installations, all right, and border facilities and D.C. That's it. That's the only thing they're entitled to own and control. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hmm.
Interesting.
Give me a minute. Give me a minute, and let me empower your audience here with what you're saying.
Oh, feel free. Empower away.
Well, what you're doing, and I'm just going to kind of sum up a lot of what you're doing, and just give me 1 minute. I'm looking at my clock here. I'm seeing if I can say this.
You got eight. You got almost nine. Oh, go for it.
Well, I don't need that much time. But thank you. For starters, the Bundy thing is an example of how many people have arms out there. I just want to remind the audience that don't own guns. The friends of mine that own guns own 5 to 20 guns each, and they own enough armory to fill all those guns. And the Ted Bundy thing becomes we the people are in charge once again, which was proven in Greg's story.
Yeah.
Secondly, I say this to the – I live near the Capitol here in Sacramento, and Greg likes that because I report to him and so forth with stuff that's happening in the fifth largest country in the world, the state capital here in Sacramento. And
yep, I appreciate
talk to the,
it.
I talk to the cops this way, and I recommend you do this the same. And I'm going to hopefully relay this to you here shortly so you get a visual of this. When I find an officer, they're highway patrol that protect the Capitol grounds, and they've gotten so scared because Gavin Newsom knows how criminal he is. He's becoming like the mafia, and he's hiring highway patrol to protect him because he's like a criminal mafia guy, so he needs protection. So I talk to the highway patrolman in this manner. When I get one alone, I say to him, I said, let's just call him Jones. I said, Mr. Jones, let's just say at some point where the guy behind you, Gavin Newsom, has become so criminal that all the people I know come from down from the hills, and there is about 10,000 of them surrounding you, and they have out-armed you because a lot of them own AR-15s and or guns as good as yours or better. And there's 6,000, 10,000 of them around this building, and there's 60 of you or 500 of you. It doesn't matter. You're outgunned. Are you going to jump the fence and join us, or are you going to protect the criminal behind you? And if you want to see somebody's head spin around in confusion, tell them that story in your own way. Say it peacefully. Say it nicely. And the best response I've gotten from one of these highway patrol is they all agree with you. They can't say it verbally because they've signed an oath. But they all agree with you. And this one guy answered it the best. He says, I hope I'm on vacation that day.
Well, yeah. And these people, here's the thing, though, the whole idea of, you know, I'm just following orders was something that happened here in Florida when the governor originally, when I called him Dictator DeSantis, closed the beaches, had the Safer at Home program, told my friend Larry Downs Jr., who makes some incredible deals, had fish and game people, and when he had two boats together, because he has a big family and they own a lot of boats, right? So he had a couple of boats together having a picnic, and the fish and game shows up. He's got this on video. You can check it out on the Action Radio video page. Just scroll down. And they said, you have to break this up. You have to separate. He's like, why? You know, he says, well, because we have a declaration of emergency. It's been declared. And, I've been empowered to separate you, you know, because we have an emergency, yada, yada, yada. I said, by what authority? You know, those orders are illegal. What law allows you to do this? He said, well, there isn't a law. I said, well, then why are you doing this? He said, well, I'm just following orders. And it's right there on tape. You know, and so
wow.
This is the problem. Oh yeah, when it really comes down to it, most police, you know, are just following orders because they want their job, they want their pension, they want to support their family, and you know, when it comes between food on the table and the Constitution, unfortunately, a lot of times food on the table wins when it shouldn't. The honorable thing is to leave the profession, stop being a law enforcement officer. If you can't follow the Constitution, you shouldn't be there. That's the honorable thing to do, but that's hard to say when you got a young officer with a spouse, you know, a couple of kids, you know, bills,
family
to feed, like that. No, I understand that, you know, but still, it doesn't matter. If you take a job in law enforcement, you have to be willing to leave that job if law enforcement becomes just following orders, as opposed to following the Constitution. Now, here's where the saving grace is of the county sheriffs. Okay, now we have some great county sheriffs out here. County sheriffs in California suck, especially around the big cities, because they violate the Second Amendment. They refuse to give out carry permits. They do all kinds of really awful things and shouldn't be there, but they're supported by the liberal establishment. Now, here, we have a county sheriff in Santa Rosa County, Florida, that goes on patrol still, you know, pulls people over, and if you have a carry permit and you're not carrying a gun, he gets mad at you. He's like, what the hell's wrong with you? This is America. Why aren't you carrying your gun? That's our sheriff, Sheriff Johnson. He's great. I've had him on the show. You know, I've had some other folks on the show, you know, from the sheriff's department. There's just some knowledge around here, right? And so but that's where the constitutional sheriffs are going to save us from the unconstitutional gun laws. When I'm talking about disarming the government, I'm talking about all these different, you know, nameless, faceless bureaucrats and departments, but particularly the Department of so-called Justice. They're the ones we need to abolish the FBI, abolish the ATF, get rid of all these different agencies that have, they've sort of made up their own powers, much like the Supreme Court made up judicial review. That's another problem. You know, so there's a lot of things to do, but I think we're better off. I think we'll be more popular disarming the government than trying to increase our arms to the point where, we're saying, well, we're going to control the government by the sheer force of the number of arms we have. I don't think that's going to work. And I appreciate the sentiment, but quite frankly, I think we need to educate people to start fighting on both ends. Arm yourself, build up your arms, practice, you know, do all that, and fight any kind of gun control. But on the other hand, we've never looked at the other side of the equation, which is disarming the government. You know, no politician's ever run saying, I'm going to disarm the FBI. And why not?
Right.
That's a perfectly valid proposition. Why won't they run on that?
And you've given people ideas, and that's a wonderful, I love. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I just want to remind you, and more importantly, remind your listeners, that when push comes to shove, we all get, for the most part now, the government's going too far. So if this time ever comes where we have to use our arms, trust me, the cops will join us. These people you're talking about will join us. The
military,
our own military, our own military
National
will
Guard.
Lay down its, our own military will lay down its gun and won't get. I mean, I think that's what happened on January 6th as well. They're like, come on in. You know, there was a lot of that going on. So
no, that
people
was
are people.
No, January 6th.
Well, you know,
was
I'm going three
too.
Different directions, but people are people, and they're not going to sit and defend stupid government people. And we have a lot of stupid, arrogant, greedy, evil government people, and these good people around them won't defend them when that time comes, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you there. But here's something, too, that it's very simple for people to start resisting, okay? The first thing you do is you resist the vaccine. If nobody wanted the vaccine, Dr. Fascist wouldn't be able to sell them. I mean, he could be going crazy and they'd be trying all these draconian measures. But the simple fact is, if most people resisted the vaccine, you know, we would stop having the vaccine. If most people kept their stores open instead of closed, complying with an unconstitutional mandate, you know, that wasn't a mandate, it was purely illegal, it didn't go through the legislative process, and even if it did, you still have a right to engage in a living, okay? You know, so if businesses had stayed open, you know, in huge amounts rather than two or three that could be made examples of. See, the problem is, you know, when people resist, it's only two or three and they get made examples of, and that terrorizes the rest. And government knows that. So resistance has to be massive and it has to be organized. So the resistance.
Okay, well,
great.
Wait.
You got a minute.
Let's try to answer your own question in that minute. And thank you very much. This whole thing has been amazingly therapeutic. I love you.
Okay.
What percentage of the three of us actually think of America's actually been vaccinated? I have my thoughts. Of the 330 million people, what percentage of us do you think have actually taken the vaccine at this point?
Maybe a third, I'm guessing. But I don't know. It could be more than
Josie?
That.
Josie?
You're the medical professional.
I think it's about a fourth.
A quarter?
So, Greg, I think what I'm trying to say is I think actually be proud of yourself. You're making an impact. The people, when they can do something without everybody else knowing it, because there's that, you know, the people love to belong and the pressure from above. So if there's not enough pressure, which you can't, you know, that's why they're trying so hard to get so many of us vaccinated, because most of us have said no.
Yeah. And also the passport, so that you have to declare whether you've had it or not. You know, I can say I'm fully vaccinated because I have my vaccine for five. Yeah.
They're paying $500 to $500 to get the vaccine, so it's sad.
Wow.
Well, it's almost 9 o'clock.
Yeah. You know, in fact, the health profession, fascinating. Most of the people in the health profession are not taking the vaccine. That should tell you enough. Hey, let's do this again soon, folks. We got to go now, though. The time has bring us to a close. God bless you too, Josie. Kyle, you as well. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. You can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/actionradio. You can listen to us in your vehicle by simply getting Action Radio in the browser and then plug that into your car audio, and off you go. I will see you tomorrow, 7 o'clock in the morning Central Time, with another fun adventure in Action Radio.